Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Trust excellence built on 40 years of experience. Visit zurichcorporate.ie to learn more about the Zurich Master Trust.
Neil, thank you very much for that. Now, on this evening's programme, we'll be hosting two panel discussions with candidates for the Midlands Northwest constituency who want to become members of the European Parliament. It's a vast constituency taking in 15 counties across three provinces with a population of 1.8 million people. We're going to be discussing issues of security, migration, agriculture and climate. And for our first panel, we're joined here in our Galway studio by Fine Gael MEP Maria Walsh, Sinn Féin MEP Chris McManus, Green Party Senator Pauline O'Reilly, ANPHU leader Padraig Tobin and Social Democrats candidate Rory Hearn, and you're all very welcome to the programme this evening. And we're going to start with the issue of migration, and Chris, I might come to yourself first because Sinn Féin is opposed to the EU Migration Pact and you've said that you're opposed to it partly on the basis of our sovereignty. Can you tell me exactly what issues you think the EU Migration Pact poses to our sovereignty?
Well, we opposed a majority of the elements of the migration pact. From our point of view, we think that Ireland needs a well-managed migration system. We think it's one that we should be able to determine here within ourselves in Ireland. There was a couple of elements that we did support around the AMMR and around data sharing around the likes of fingerprints. I think the fact that what we've seen regarding policing on the island of Ireland for those who are...
I'm going to stop you there if you don't mind, because the question is, what issues or what threat does the EU Migration Pact pose to our sovereignty exactly?
Well, what we want to see is a fair, efficient and enforced system.
You've said that.
No, and I know that. And that means that for us in Ireland, the decisions need to be taken closer to the ground by those who are going to be affected. We need to have agility and we need to have flexibility. We can't have a one-size-fits-all solution, which is what we would have if we opt in regards to the Migration Pact. So we believe in Sinn Féin that it's better for us to be able to determine those elements of our migration system at a national level.
So you want to be able to take less migrants, is it, at some point in the
future? No, that's not it. What we want to be able to do is determine what an Irish solution in an Irish context rather than a one-size-fits-all, because what we would have if we agree to the full opt-in, which is what the government wants, is that our decisions would be determined by Brussels. And we believe not only on matters regarding this issue, but on tax matters, on Irish defence and security.
Marie Walsh, are our decisions determined by Brussels? Because you're supportive of this EU Migration Pact.
I am supportive.
Does that take
of
the control of migration out of our hands?
Listen, migration is a European issue and therefore, in my eyes, hence the reason why I voted for the Migration Pact, should be dealt with at a European level. We have been working towards a migration pact for well over a decade, and we have, if we deal with it in a sovereignty, as Sinn Féin is asking us to do so, we'll be in the lines of what Brexiteers have asked us to do, and you can see an influx of migration into the UK, and they can't deal with it. We need to deal with this as a pact. We have opted in, or it's still of course under debate and discussion at the levels of the Oireachtas here, but from our eyes we need to move towards a pact where all 27 member states are working together.
Does it take
and
the decisions out of our hands though?
Absolutely not, because we are at the decision making table. As a Fine Gael MEP sitting in the EPP group, we work with centrists, we work with a pan-European to make sure all governments are working towards this pact. Never before have we had this before. And right now, sadly, with the infrastructure built here for just, what, over 3,000 people, it's not fit for purpose.
Okay.
And therefore,
Padraig
we need to work in that pact.
It doesn't take the decisions out of our hands. We are at the table. We get to opt in and then we get to continue to feed into that if there's any amendments made.
OK, it massively reduces our say in relation to this. So instead of having 100% say over the numbers that we take in or the cost that it will include, we have a small say on a majority voting basis. And, you know, obviously Ireland is not going to be able to push back against the large European countries in relation to this. You know, the European Union is obviously a very positive role in Ireland, but it does make some decisions at times in relation to really important issues on the basis of what's good for Germany, what's good for France. We saw it in the banking crisis.
Can you explain exactly what is it about the pact that you think is going to harm Ireland?
So, for example, the rules of the pact can be changed halfway through.
Once we opt in, we're in. No,
so,
well, Helen McEntee said in committee that we have to opt in this time, and if those rules are amended, we have to opt in again.
Well, Helen McEntee is not correct in this. My understanding is that once you opt in, you are in, and as a result, you have to take the rules as handed down.
That could be further from the truth. First and foremost, we're working towards this over the next 2-year period. all member states feeding into this will feed into it in an equal measure. I argue with the deputy,
I just want to get clarity. That we opt into these rules now. If the rules are changed again, do we have the option of opting into those changed rules, or is that a vote by majority, as Pather is saying?
Once we opt in, and then we continue to work towards that.
What does that mean?
Well, from a government, our ministers would continue to
I'll phrase the question again, because I think it's really important for listeners to understand, right? So we opt into this, which says we have to take, for example, a certain amount of migrants, or we have to pay a certain amount of money if we don't want to take that certain amount of migrants. Now, if in 5 years' time the EU decides, actually, we're going to up that percentage and you have to take more migrants, do we get a chance to opt out of that at that point? Or if we're in, are we in?
Well, first, can I just stress, we are working towards this migration pact for the next two year
period.
That's
not the question.
Yeah, but it is a part of the question. It's not a clean streak of populists that we can say yes or no. Can I just finish my point? At a council level, we'll discuss and debate, and then that is down to government officials to continue on working under the migration pact.
I have no idea what that answer means. If I'm listening at home, I have no idea what that answer means. If there are changes to this migration pact in the future and we have opted in, do we get a chance to opt out of those changes? That's the question.
I'm answering the question, Sarah.
What's the answer?
We are working towards a very clear pact in the next 2 years at governmental level. So...
All right, I want to go
to Lanigan's ball. It's not Lanigan's ball. You can't opt in and opt out again in the future.
I haven't really got clarity on that, to be honest. I'm going to move on.
The government are telling us this is the solution, yet they still haven't brought it to the Dáil.
It's being discussed in the Oireachtas Committee. It's going to come forward.
I want to bring in my other guest, and Pauline O'Reilly, you want a human rights-based system, but you're voting for a pact that involves fingerprinting, children, detention centres, processing times that 160 civil and human rights organisations say shouldn't go ahead.
Yeah, and at a European level, the European Greens, we did oppose a number of elements of it. I think the key thing for us in Ireland is, does it create a baseline from which we can have superior levels of human rights? And yes, it does. We can't do this alone. We have to know that. Surely we know that we can't just take an approach to migration in Ireland. We can see what's happening right now in Britain. To say that we can do this alone, I think, is just impractical. But for us, we have major concerns that a lot of the humanitarian aspects haven't been addressed. And that's why, in relation to search and rescue, in relation to the criminalisation of people who do help those who are literally drowning in the seas in the Mediterranean, it's not addressing any of that.
But
it's
you're also supporting this.
We're not supporting any of those elements on a European basis because we have real concern.
Green TDs in the Dáil are going to walk through and vote this through.
Hold on a second. What they're doing is deciding whether Ireland can opt into something that Ireland can manage because we can increase the human rights here, and we can. But in Europe, we have a real problem that we have far-right governments who could put in place detention centres. And unfortunately, unless you're an MEP, you don't get to decide what the terms are of that pact.
Can I just get clarity on what you're saying, which is that we're voting through something that you have serious concerns about from a human rights perspective, but it's okay because in Ireland, you're saying, we'll make sure that we'll go above and beyond what's in this pact for human rights.
The TDs in Ireland don't vote through the pact for Europe. They vote whether they're going to sign up to it and then do more.
People will be detained, forcibly detained. As a last resort, she said, but it will happen.
Well, that's a decision that she can't make alone, and that is a decision for Ireland as a whole.
I certainly don't believe
that we are going to be looking at detention. But what I absolutely...
This pact has been passed in the EU. Green TDs are going to vote it through in Ireland, and it says there will be detention centres. You can't just not believe in something
The pact in Europe allows governments to have detention centres. Yeah. It doesn't mean that Ireland is going to have detention centres.
But Helen McIntyre said we'll have detention centres. She said in committee 2 weeks ago.
Just for clarification, at the last resort is what Minister McIntyre said.
No, she said there will be detention centres that people will be requested to reside in, and they will be forced to reside in them as a last resort, but they will be requested to reside in them as a matter of course. Yeah, and so there will be detention centres and people will be asked to stay there.
But the points of entry, and in the majority of cases, it should be no longer than 7 days. Hence the reason why we're building towards a better infrastructure place. So applications
will
be...
Okay, I have to bring in Roy Hearn.
Can I just flag here, because there's an independent human rights body monitoring in which what Pauline is saying...
Well, there is not enough monitoring, Maria. There's not enough monitoring. We have serious concerns over that for other countries beyond Ireland.
Thanks, Pauline. Roy Hearn, you think this is all a manufactured controversy, is that right?
I do. And first of all, to say the Social Democrats and myself are very, very concerned about the Migration Pact in terms of its human rights impacts. In terms of the wider immigration discussion, I think that what we're seeing right now, the way in which migration is being framed as a negative, rather than actually migrants making a massive contribution to this country and to Europe, I think it's deeply disappointing. There was no reason why the government, aside from a political decision, and I describe as a populist decision, to start handing out tents to vulnerable asylum seekers. That was a political decision when they had alternative choices available.
There was a 415% increase in the number of applications for international protection applicants in this country in 2022 compared to 2021. And it's gone up significantly since then again. So how can you call that a manufacturer crisis?
Because their response to it was a decision to give people tents rather than go what they're doing right now, which is finding different places to put people. Why did they not decide that to do that when they made this decision? It was because they didn't want to. They wanted to pander to the far right, and that's what they've been doing. Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil and the Greens, and we've seen it, Simon Harris since becoming Taoiseach, you know, cuts to Ukrainian entitlements, review of welfare, the border checks. They're more interested in getting tough on vulnerable asylum seekers than getting tough on vulture funds, getting tough on landlords. And I believe that there's a lot of this discussion is to try and scapegoat migrants from the absolute disastrous housing policies, the failure to address people's...
What would Social Democrats do to try and manage the flow of migration?
Well, first of all, we would start by changing the whole frame of the discussion about immigration. What we would say is that we are a wealthy country. Immigrants are in our hospitals. They're in our schools. They are part of us.
Yeah, that is actually policy.
It would be a policy decision to stand up and instead of attacking vulnerable asylum seekers, as the Taoiseach is doing, actually saying these people need our refuge and support. No, it's not factually incorrect.
Can I just
to come back in on this? No, I'm going to bring in Pather.
Just very briefly, the problem with the mainstream parties is they're not listening to the people in relation to this. People do want to have humanity at the heart of this. They absolutely do. But they also want to make sure that the government know what they're doing. I got a PQ back just this week, and the state is receiving 70,000 applications a week for visas at the moment. And I asked the government, do you know how many people are leaving the country after a visa has expired? And the government said to me, we do not know how many people leave the country after a visa expired. And that's one of about 10 examples of the government saying they don't know what's happening. And that's why people are getting frustrated at home. It's not because they don't want a bit of humanity in the system, it's because they want the government to get to grips with the system.
The reason why people are frustrated is because there's a generation stuck at home. People can't access GPs. Sure. People are facing waiting lists for their children, none of which were caused by immigrants, but they were caused by failures of successive governments of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael to invest in these services.
But the point is, the government created a community dividend fund of 50 million euros a couple of years ago and said when communities take in asylum seekers, they will get money from that community dividend fund. And very little of that has been spent on anything in terms of doctors, nurses, teachers, housing or transport. So the government is in itself, I believe, creating the disintegration that's happening within Irish society. Because they're not listening to the people, they're not communicating with people and they're not investing.
We heard there what Roy Hearn is saying, Chris, about a move to the far right or pandering to the far right. Those from government parties, those allegations have also been made to Sinn Féin because much of what the government is doing at the moment is supported by Sinn Féin, and indeed Sinn Féin TDs in some instances are calling for the government to go further. For example, now there's immigration checks being taken place more frequently on the border, and we see some of your Fianna Fáil colleagues calling for more checks to be taking place. We're going to be discussing that with some of them later in the programme. Do you think there should be more checks on the border, for example?
Look, the common travel area is older than the EU and it's much older than Brexit. And to me, as an Irish Republican, in the first instance, I want to see my country united. Now, that's not going to happen in the very immediate future. But what we do need to see is the government first of all, rectifying the issue that came out of the recent High Court case and putting in a legislative solution in that regards, but also sitting down then with the British government and having a proper diplomatic conversation, because we've invested too
but
much.
In the meantime, do you support those immigration checks on the border?
Look, the Gardaí are just doing the job that they're being asked to do. Look, the blame lies at the end of the day with the government, who have basically overseen a chaotic system from start to finish. And the other thing I want to go back to is this.
It's amazing Sinn Féin can't say no to that question. Given that they're an Irish Republican political party and they can't say that they oppose checks on the border. I think that's an example of Sinn Féin not being able to stand by any of its core values over the last while. And it's one of the reasons why people have lost faith in Sinn Féin. They're losing credibility because they won't stand up for anything anymore.
Look, Pather is coming from where Pather is coming from in this regard.
A lot of people might voice similar
thoughts. No, we understand the history that Pather and Sinn Féin have.
If you can't stand up for free travel on the border, I believe that there should be an IRC border for the movement of people, and actually a poll in
Checks on the border between Northern Ireland.
It is absolutely ludicrous to think that spot checks are going to make a whit of difference on the border.
But hold on, I need to be very clear on this. I absolutely will never support a hard border on the Isle of Arran. We worked too hard on the Good Friday Agreement for 25 years to maintain a peace process. The majority of people voted for it. We've invested too much time.
All right. I want to move on to the issues of climate and agriculture. And Maria, your leader Simon Harris was out earlier this month saying there should be no reduction of the national herd. Then yesterday we have this EPA report showing that our legally binding EU targets for a 42% reduction of greenhouse gases won't be met by 2030.
Well, first and foremost, it always frustrates me where we're just only speaking about agriculture when we talk about our climate crisis and not about other sectors, like 75% of our energy emissions coming from that particular sector. We should be discussing in this what we can do at a European level, like renewables, like making the port down here in Galway a hydro port, the offshore wind opportunities that we have becoming a powerhouse for Europe.
Okay, so agriculture makes up 40% of our emissions, and at the moment Chagask is saying that even if a whole range of additional climate related measures for the sector, that includes slurry stores, limits on nitrogen fertiliser usage, switching to different fertilisers, even if we did all of that, that we'd only reduce emissions by 18% when we need to get to 25%.
From an agriculture standpoint, but we have farmer and farm families right across this country that are working night and day on lands that they know better than you and I, and are doing so at the protection of the climate and the biodiversity law. So we have farmers who are trying to diverse. We have farmers who are ensuring that finishing of cattle is better, that the DNA of cattle is better.
I know farmers are doing their best. I'm wondering, are farmers being led down the garden path by our political leaders who are saying that it's fine to keep going with the national herd as it is, there's no need for a reduction, when the science and the figures seem to say differently?
Yeah, but my argument to you here, Sarah, is we have to stop this argument that it's only agriculture that is feeding into this.
And this is the topic that I'm choosing to speak to you about today. I'm going to speak now about transport as well, but that's what I'm asking you about specifically right now.
Well, we are building towards a common agricultural policy. We're ensuring that we have a just transition for our farmers, that they're tapping into agri-tech, that they're developing their herds, that they're ensuring that our indigenous business is putting food on the table in front of people right across Europe three times a day at minimum. They have been doing it for so long, and they've been doing on lands that they're protecting.
You've got your heads in the sand, don't you?
How have we got our heads in the sand,
Because
Sarah?
You've signed up to legally binding targets that we are going to miss, and the science is telling you that the only way to reach those legally binding targets is to reduce the national herd.
I, for one, as a young terrain farmer, as someone with a Master's in Ag Extension from UCD, will not be, and speaking to farmers up and down this constituency day in, day out, believe we need to protect our derogation, we need to protect our farm families, we need to ensure that, yes, they're getting to the targets that they need to get to.
But they're not getting to the targets they need to get to. That's the point.
But we have a number of farm families here that are reaching their targets and by removing the low-hanging fruit. Like I said, finishing cattle off early.
I want to bring in Pauline O'Reilly, because the EPA report also yesterday showed that your own party leader, Eamon Ryan, he's on course to significantly miss his own targets in the area of transport.
Well, look, I'll be perfectly honest with you now. Listening to Fine Gael just there talking, you know, quite frankly, waffle when it comes to climate. Like, since we went into government, we have been dragging by the heels the other two political parties. Before we went into government, Ireland was increasing its emissions by 10% every year. And now we aren't on course to hit the target of 51%.
If it was just the
Greens making decisions over how to spend the funding, we would be. And so we're on course now for just under 30%.
I don't know. Can you say that if we didn't have these guys with us, we'd be meeting our targets when your own leader in his own department isn't meeting his targets?
Everybody knows that that's the case. Everybody knows that when it comes to budgets, you have to get the three party leaders to sign off on things. Now, when it comes to transport in particular, we have done a huge amount. I think people take things up when you put it on offer. 700%. It's easy to just attack people
Maria,
who are in
Maria
government.
Maria was just making the point there that everyone always talks about agriculture. And actually that EPA report found yesterday that improvements in agriculture were cancelled out by other things such as not increasing petrol and diesel, which was in discussion in plans and has never materialised.
Again, the idea that it's just agriculture, I completely disagree with that, and I completely am on board with what Maria is saying. It's frustrating because this is the third now debate in a row where we've discussed climate with agriculture, and that's why this frustration is coming to the fore. I mean, we're here in Galway, my hometown, and people have sandbags outside their homes in the Claddagh. This is the reality. And what also came out yesterday is that we are now in danger of actually hitting 2.5 degrees above.
And you've had 5 years in government.
Yes, and we've reduced things significantly. I would argue that you put any other party in that position and they would not have reached anything near where we have reached.
In relation to a reduction in carbon at the moment is the inability of the government to deliver on capital projects. We've had more conferences on offshore wind turbines than we have offshore wind turbines in this country. There's seven in existence in the last 20 years. An incredible situation. We have a Western rail corridor with the people crying out for public transport to be able to bring them along that route. No movement on that. The Navan to Dublin rail line.
There's no ring fence funding
and the planning hasn't been completed in relation to this. It's still way off in the horizon. And unfortunately, most of these projects are horizon politics. They're off in the future. By the time you get there, they're actually gone.
It's almost 170 million.
Sorry, Maria, I said I'll let Pauline in. Pauline.
Like, it's completely untrue to say that there has been no movement when the line is being cleared. And when we went into government, we had a report that said, no, let's not do this. And now we've turned that around. And when we were in government last time, when we went into government, we had to have a new report because the last report from the last minister before us said, let's not do it.
And now
we've decided that we have enough there, that we will get it done. But the other thing is, on offshore renewables...
All right, one second. No, I want to bring in Rory.
Yeah, I just want to make the point that the whole question of climate has been framed again as a negative rather than been seen as, number one, as you're absolutely right to say, it is essential that we actually go beyond our targets in terms of the climate crisis. But the other aspect is why the Greens have failed in government and why Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have actually damaged what we need to do in terms of people's support for the green issue is that they've failed to put social justice and inequality central. Two ideas, and we need to give people solutions here, two ideas that would actually help people and also achieve the green transition. The first one is the offshore renewables. Really important point. It's been developed at the moment by private companies. Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, just like they sold off our homes, have sold off our renewable energy just off the coast of Connemara. There's a massive wind farm being developed for enough electricity for 350,000 homes. They sold it to an Australian investment fund. People here in this country could be getting much cheaper electricity if we developed it using what the Social Democrats have proposed, which is a climate transformation fund. These should be public infrastructure using our natural resources to reduce people's cost of electricity and address the cost of living. The other idea is the retrofitting of homes. The only people who can afford to retrofit their homes are people who have money. There are hundreds of thousands. No, hang on a minute. Hang on. No, that's not factual.
There is a small number of
grants that have been made available. But if you go around this country, you will see the absolute majority of homes are not retrofitted and there's no plan to retrofit them on a major scale.
I want to bring in Chris because you've been very quiet over there, Chris. And I know Sinn Féin voted against the Nature Restoration Fund. We haven't got into that in detail
indeed
at the moment. You also voted, I think, against a ban on bottom trawling, a ban on mining in marine protected areas and a bill that would have
Hold on, that's not correct in the first instance. There was an amendment regarding that ban and we supported it. And what it actually was part of a non non-binding, non-legislative report. So in that regards, it doesn't have didn't carry.
Can you tell me what climate action Sinn Féin has voted in favour of at EU level?
What we want to see is firstly, is that the finger stops being pointed fair and square at the agricultural sector.
The question was, what climate actions has Sinn Féin voted in favour of at EU level?
Well, at EU level, we voted for the progressive elements of Fit for 55, but because quite a number of the substantive and key elements of it to make sure that the Paris agreements were reached, we weren't able to support it.
Because you voted against
substance.
That. What did you vote for?
What we voted for and what we've wanted to see is basically a revision of EU fiscal rules to see that there'd be an exemption for investment in the likes of infrastructure. Because
that's not a climate action now specifically. It can be
from the point of view, because if you're from the west of Ireland, where we want to see sustainable public transport and where we don't have it, and where we see failure of government again and again to put the Atlantic Economic Corridor in with a 10T core network so that we can get funding for sustainable transport down on the western side of the island.
With the greatest respect, Chris, you can't get something you didn't vote for. So, I mean, it's really clear. Like, what are we telling voters?
What's really clear is that the government have been failing to step up in regards to addressing regional imbalance.
What's clear is you're not voting for climate ambitions in Europe, the smallest group we have in the Parliament.
The problem with this here is the reason why climate has become such a touchstone issue is because the government are using all stick and no carrot. The government are radically increasing the taxes on fuel, on people who are using their cars to get to work, without putting the alternatives in terms of the public transport in place. Mm. So, for example, you know,
what stick would you vote for? Do you agree there has to be some stick?
Well, first of all, I think we need to look at what the carrots are straight off. So, for example...
But the carrots are easy.
No, they're not easy because...
They are.
No,
it's easy to give people things.
First of all,
it's much harder to take them away. So what things will you take away?
Here's the point. Retrofitting is on the floor in this country.
People are
crying out for their houses to be warm and cheaper to run.
Yeah.
Public transport is not being delivered in the manner than it should be. Microgeneration is still really slow in running out.
I'm interested. Yeah. What difficult measures would you support?
What I'm saying, you put the carrots in place first and then you use the taxes to change behaviour. But putting the taxes in place to change behaviour when people have no alternatives
is
putting it backwards. And all the focus is on farming at the moment. And like, for example, farmers see what's happening to their sector. They see the fact that the incomes are falling
in
that space. And then they look at the data centres that are cropping up in the country. And then they look at the fact that Ryanair is increasing its flights into the country.
So what would you do there when it comes to data centres, for example?
Absolutely, there should be a cap put on the number of data centres in relation to this.
How would that affect our economy?
First of all, it would affect it very little in terms of jobs, because there's very few jobs tied up in data centres. And secondly, you know, it would actually free up, for example, electricity generation. We have Bord na Mónaí now who are signing exclusive contracts
with the likes of... The big tech companies say they want them here.
Yeah, so there you go. Then the priority changes. The priority changes when it comes to big tech companies. It changes when it comes to the Mercosur deal, when it talks about taking beef from South America over to Ireland. It changes when it taking peat from the Netherlands and Latvia into Ireland. That's why farmers see the hypocrisy in all of this, because they're the target and the priority on the environment, except when it's Mercosur, except when it's big tech,
except that that's completely false. I mean, the European Greens are the ones leading the charge when it comes to not signing up to Mercosur. Like, that's the first thing. The second thing is you always bring in farmers so that we can't discuss something else, when actually this affects everybody. This affects, as I said, the people of the sandbags at the ready in the cladder right now, because climate change is happening. And you're all putting your head in the sand about it. You've had your chance to speak. We have had a 700% increase on rural transport since we came into government. We have 100 houses a day putting solar panels on the roofs. Why? I had a bill that would eliminate the planning permission for solar on roofs.
And it took
Fine Gael two years to actually to agree to that. Also, in relation to retrofitting, 60% are free.
I want to bring in Roy.
And we're going beyond our targets.
Roy Hearn, you want to move away from food production based on pesticides, fertilisers, animal feed and fossil fuels. Do you accept that it's very good for the environment, will make food more expensive?
Well, I think the starting point has to be we have to create a sustainable agriculture system. We have to create a food system, a system of agriculture that's sustainable. Mm. And when we look at the model at the moment, and it's just not. It's polluting our rivers. It is not sustainable in terms of meeting our climate targets. Food, there is an issue around food, okay? And there is an issue around farmers. One of the big issues that farmers face is that they are being squeezed all the time. And this is squeezed all the time by the big supermarkets, right? The big food.
And the factories.
Yeah, Padraig's absolutely right. And the factories. We don't see talk about that. We don't see talk about farm. And I'll come back to it. Because in order... The price we are paying for our food... A lot of it is going in profits to big supermarkets.
So how do we fix that?
How do we fix that? We have to look at regulating food. We have to look at in terms of food. Food is a fundamental human right.
So what does regulating food mean?
What does regulating food prices? It looks at regulating food prices.
So you start telling the supermarkets how much they can or can't charge.
We need to start looking at our food production system and the way in which we deliver. Because this is really
a competition authority.
A retail sector.
Okay, everyone's getting in this. I want to be fine. One second. Just let me speak for a second. Padraig, one second. I'm just going to explain what's going to happen next because everyone has brightened up at that. So I want to hear all your thoughts on it and then we have to go to break. So Padraig.
Yes, a proper competition authority would make sure that the profits are actually equally distributed in the supply chain there. So right now, all the profits are landing in the factories and supermarkets and the farmers are being squeezed in terms of income. But that squeeze is also having an environmental effect because farmers are so stuffed trying to make a living that that's putting pressure on the environment around it. So actually fixing the profit distribution in that market would have two effects. It would make sure the family farms can make a living and it would improve the ability to protect the environment.
I'll bring it back up to Europe where I've been working for 5 years and just to flag to the colleagues who spoke right before, the adoption of the first ever directive to tackle unfair trading practices in the food supply chain was one of our group's EPP successes and that, ensure, will work for European food producers.
All right, Pauline? Did you want to say anything on that?
The real issue around food production is climate and nature. We are hanging in the balance now and we may not be able to produce our own food. We have to get it right from the point of view of the ground up, from our soil to our air quality, to our water quality, because we are in real danger here and I'm not hearing that sense of urgency.
Well, what we need to see is that there's a level playing field for those food producers within the European Union who unfortunately are being swamped by lower grade product that is causing what would be known as carbon leakage and basically pushing the problems elsewhere. And unfortunately, Ursula von der Leyen says she wants to ramp up free trade and that is detrimental.
Okay, we'll be talking about Ursula von der Leyen in our next section because we're going to be talking about neutrality and security. Stay with us. Our panel are staying with us after the break.
Tweet at DriveTimeRTE.
Our panel are still with us. I was just telling them to keep the arguing for on air because they were having quite a discussion off air there. We have Maria Walsh, Chris McManus, Pauline O'Reilly, Padraig Tobin and Rory Hearn. And I want to move on to the issues of neutrality and security. And Padraig, you said yesterday that the Irish government threat to remove the triple lock is a threat to national security. Hardly.
Well, no, what I said was that I believe the government is a threat to national security. So, for example, the government can't float a boat in the Navy at the moment. Well, just one boat because it won't staff the system. We lost about 2,500 soldiers in the last 10 years because it won't pay the soldiers properly. And even in the cyber attack that happened, the Department of the Taoiseach was spending more on press statements in the year of the cyber attack than the actual National Cybersecurity Centre was receiving. And now we've had that attack cost 100 million euros and many lives as well. And what I'm saying is the government, again, are talking about defence and security, but are actually just looking to outsource it instead of doing what it should be doing as a state itself. And, you know, in terms of...
How are they outsourcing it, though?
Well,
because
there
would still have to be approval, for example, with the triple lock. There'd have to be approval by the Dáil and the government.
Well, first of all, if you get rid of the triple lock, it allows us to participate more in military blocks in future because it just needs the EU mandate in relation to that. And the Taoiseach has already stated that he is happy to see us get rid of the veto in terms of military actions and decisions in future as well, which would, again, dilute our ability, our sovereignty to be able to make a say over this.
Do you agree with that, Chris?
Yes, absolutely. I think look at the commitments that have been given by the government and in the Programme for Government and indeed by Fianna Fáil at the last general election are now not being upheld. Commitments that were given during the Nice and Lisbon treaties to the Irish people are now being cast aside by the current government. Even the chair's report from the Taoiseach's consultative forum said there's no public appetite for a change to the current policy in neutrality. The very least they could do if this is the route that they want to go down and they're determined to proceed, and that's quite disgraceful in my opinion, but they should allow the people to decide by referendum, because I think our neutrality is something that should be enshrined in referendum. I met a woman, I was canvassing in the Nair Square today.
But she said, is this really a threat to our neutrality?
Absolutely not.
Is just to allow us to not be beholden to the UN Security Council veto if we want to send more than 12 Irish peacekeepers abroad.
In particular Russia.
Well, those who actually, you know, cite the veto as some form of threat to Irish neutrality, you need to remember that it was actually Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, not any of the UN permanent members who withdrew Ireland's contribution to the UN peacekeeping force in the Golan Heights last month at a time when it's more crucial than ever. You know, so, and as I said, I was meeting somebody today and they were in Eyre Square and they started asking me about neutrality and what, you know, would the government, were they going to let us down? And then what they literally said to me, and I've never been more pregnant, if they let us down in Ireland, they're going to let us down in Europe. And
all right, Rory. What do you think of this?
Well, I think in terms of that, Ireland needs to be very, very clear. And I would go to Europe as an MEP that would absolutely defend our neutrality. But also we do need to invest in our own defence forces in terms of, you know, we have a long history of engagement with the UN, and that would be our priority. And just to say, we can't talk about the issue of neutrality and militarisation at a European level without mentioning the genocide in Gaza. And in terms of at a European Union level, the absolutely shameful, disgraceful role that Maria's party, the head of it, von der Leyen, has played, and the utter failure of the European Union to provide leadership to stop the sale of weapons to Israel. And we need,
I would push for a
suspension of the European Union trade agreement with Israel.
Let me ask Maria about that, because the Geneva International Peace Research Institute, Maria, has accused Ursula von der Leyen of complicity in war crimes and crimes against humanity committed by Israel against Palestinians in Gaza, and yet you continue to support her.
She's a part of our group. I don't agree with her initial response to October 7th, and I've said so very clearly and very publicly.
She hasn't done a whole lot since either, has she?
Well, just to your point, there is very much diverging views and opinions in the EU. And we're working within the EU, within our own political group of the EPP. We have seen a shift to where we would see it and most welcome it as most pro-Palestinian.
You could make the decision not to support her.
Well, can I just talk about the work that she's done outside of that? But to your point of do you support her, do you not? I categorically do not support her in her initial response to October 7th. As I said, working with MEPs right across both our political group in the EPP group and the Parliament, we have seen a shift in change of being more pro-Palestinian. And our country, and our Irish country, has been steadfast in that and leading out that change across Europe. We've seen further investment.
Can I just say it's really disappointing to hear Fine Gael have voted against EPP on numerous things, but they've decided in relation to Ursula von der Leyen that they're not going to. And I don't think that there's one Irish person listening who doesn't find the remarks by Ursula von der Leyen shameful and her support of Israel shameful. And I think, you know, when it comes to the triple lock,
but I've called that out.
Calling it out's not enough, Maria. When you actually have voted against EPP on some things, and in relation to the bottom line, you're not. You know, you're not. And in relation to Russia and the UN Security Council, I don't think that the Irish people would support Russia, the US, and China being able to stop us from being involved in peacekeeping. Let's just think for 1 minute about Gaza, for instance. When the invasion and genocide that is taking place in Gaza is over, there may come a time where we want to send peacekeepers from Ireland to Gaza. Is the US going to block us? Yes, they will, unless we change the triple lock. We're still holding on to a triple lock, but what we're doing is saying Ireland gets more decisions over how that is used.
All right, folks, we have to leave it there. Thank you all so much for joining us this evening. That is Maria Walsh, Chris McManus, Pauline O'Reilly, Heather Tobin and Rory Hearn. Do stay tuned. We're going to have five more candidates from the Midlands Northwest constituency joining us after six.